This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, confiscate language's selfie stick and snap it over my knee. Following last episode's Letterpalooza, today we're rummaging through the postbag. But not my own postbag.
Warning! There are three Category B swears in this episode. Prepare yourselves accordingly. Okay, let's rip open some envelopes. On with the show.
Oh, gosh. I think, you know, the value first and foremost is in, I think, touching something that someone else touched and wrote and thought about and sent. I'm struck now by the effort it takes to actually write and send a letter. That's always been the case, but it now that we do it so infrequently, it's that much more effort. I'd still receive letters in the mail, but many fewer than I used to. But the kind of glee and excitement of getting a letter is something unparalleled by any sort of digital missive that comes through.
This is Julie Shapiro, the executive producer of Radiotopia and a keen letter writer. Well, she tries to be. It can be hard to find the time, but I've seen some pages of the ledger she was keeping a few years ago noting all letters sent and received, and she is an impressively diligent and multinational correspondent.
A lot of the people who I ended up writing letters with, I met through doing a zine, actually, that started through contributions through the mail. And some people read my zine and started writing letters, and other people contributed, and those sort of back and forths just lasted.
Some of her pen palships have lasted for two decades. For instance, there is one pen pal, Laris, with whom Julie has been exchanging for years a list of favorite words.
And so we would just send something and include our new favorite word on the list and send the list back with the additional favorite word. And recently, last year, he kind of struck the list back up and sent me a very short letter with the list. And he added the 26th word to the list. So we had, you know, sent this back and forth 13 times each. And it's a pretty good list of words, I think.
Ooh, do you have it?
I have it right in front of me. Licorice, pajama, cul-de-sac, gurney, verge, kudos, stave, villain, avid, squirrel, utterance, word, florid, smitten. I don't know how to pronounce this next one. Onychophagy.
That is new to me.
Onychophagy. Well, I had totally forgotten what this word meant, but it has to do with nail biters, like the condition of being a nail biter or having your nails bitten. So it's an amazing word.
It sounds so much more elegant than what it means.
I know. It's amazing there is a word for that. But of course, there's a word for everything, right? Continuing on, we have average, calendula, beard, drivel, lateral, rue with an X, R-O-U-X, tight, castle, abacus, mangle. And then he came back with jubilee last year.
One word at a time, back and forth, over years. The value of the correspondence isn't just about the volume of information contained therein. The act of sending the letter is expressive in itself.
And of course, you know, for me, the process of mailing things out and then getting the mail back. I have a six-year-old son, and he gets a little grumpy when I get mail, and he says, well, I don't get any mail, and I repeat myself. To get mail, you have to send mail. It's a really easy equation.
Julie's six-year-old son has recently started his own word exchange with a pen pal in Australia. It's up to two words so far, love and bear.
What strikes me is that people like overreact so much to the idea of letters. Like, oh, you still write letters? And like, as if they're exotic and impossible, and they're not, you know, anyone can and should and could.
And if you do, you can't necessarily predict what might result.
So my life changed nearly two decades ago, I think. No, my life probably changed like maybe 17, 18 years ago. I discovered a love letter that I'd written to somebody when I was in high school, and she was like a year younger than me. But I discovered that in my mid-20s. I'm now 42. And what I discovered was a letter that I had never given to this person.
Uh-huh. Do you remember why you didn't give it to her at the time?
I didn't give her the letter because, quite honestly, I was chicken shit.
This is Dave Nadelberg, who 15 years ago founded Mortified, a stage show where people read things they wrote as kids. Diaries, letters, poems, song lyrics. Mortified now runs live events in 20 cities around the world.
It's been made into a documentary, TV series, books, including the new Mortified guided journal, My Mortified Life, and It's a Podcast, also a member of Radiotopia. But all that stemmed from the moment when Dave, then in his mid-20s, was visiting his parents in his hometown in Michigan. He was rummaging through his old room when he found a box.
And inside that box, oh, it was like, you know, it was really like opening up the Ark of the Covenant. And it was like, anyway, there was like a whole bunch of things in there. And one of those things was a letter. And I read it and I thought, this is ridiculous.
He'd written the letter when he was age 15 or 16. I think we can all identify with having been a bit ridiculous at 15 or 16.
What year would that have been? I probably wrote it in like 91 or something. The letter was intended for a classmate, and I didn't really know her. I still don't. I would make up all these excuses to talk to this girl. I would come up with all these different ways to approach her. For instance, I worked in the school library, so I'd print up all these fake library fines and saying, if you have issue with this, come and complain in the library at like Thursday at 3 p.m., which was my shift. Shocking.
Fancy that.
And so that I didn't get busted, I gave it to like five other students in that class.
Oh, no.
Nobody ever came and complained. So
did they pay?
Yeah. My whole thing was like, oh, I'll just waive it for you. Don't worry about this. And I'll rip up the library fine and I'll be her hero. And yeah.
Would this girl realize that Dave, whom she hardly knew, was actually the guy of her dreams because he waived her library fine? We'll never know, because she never came to contest the fine.
How long were you into her?
Years.
And at some point during these years of unrequited ardour, most of high school, Dave reckons, he composed a love letter.
I wrote this letter, I think, at least 15, 20 times. There was drafts of this letter. Like, I remember writing it probably on the backs of napkins, and I might have typed some of them up. This was a handwritten one. The one that I found, the only one that exists, as far as I know, I wrote it on the back of the entry form of my high school's poetry magazine, of which I was an editor. I say that proudly. I don't know if I should have been. But I often point that out just to sort of showcase the level of pretentiousness like that I am. Because like when you hear the letter, there's a lot of flowery, overwrought kind of like... it's trying very hard to be a lot of things to this stranger.
It's not really a love letter. The tone is not amorous. Dave jokingly calls it a cover letter.
Because it's like I'm applying for the job of like her boyfriend, and so it's just as awkward as a cover letter would be. Okay. Hello, Leslie. How is your day today? Mine's quite well, I must admit. I do hope that yours is a good one, because what you are about to read may or may not add an extra color to the rainbow at day's end. First off, let me introduce myself. My name is Dave. For quite some time, I've been trying to figure out a way to meet you. The older we all get and the more the time that we include into history passes on, it has seemingly become harder and harder to get to know one another. I could have just called you or simply approached you and said hi. But with that, there's no enchantment or uniqueness. Besides, that means actually having to use courage. So I wimped. Sue me. I could have also faxed you. My, wouldn't that be modern? Ah, yes, but maybe just a bit too high tech. So what am I left with? Of course, write her a letter. Why not? I've got nothing to lose but my dignity, pride, courage, confidence, self-respect. And it keeps going. Acceptance, sleep, honor. I'm going.
You're really talking around the subject, aren't you? She's gone through, what, more than a page at this point, and you haven't really got to your demands.
That's correct. And this is, I think, a big problem with a lot of teenage writing. And certainly with me, I'm beating around the bush. What did I say at the beginning? For quite some time, I've been trying to figure out a way to meet you. But I don't get to why. Basically, this whole thing has been a commercial, an advertisement. I sincerely hope you'll at least consider purchasing the product. Here's a coupon. And then it's got my number. 851-7358, Dave. And then I drew tiny cartoon scissors gobbling up dashes like, you know, Pac-Man as they circle my name and number around everything. So like just for the authenticity. And it even said clip and save.
So you can't even, when you get to the point, say it directly. You have to put it in the form of a commercial.
Yeah, everything is cute and it's holding back and it's all the qualities in a romantic relationship that I do not value today. Like, this is not the person I would want to be. Just be forthright and be vulnerable. This guy, this kid who wrote this, is like terrified of being vulnerable.
Do you think one of the reasons why he didn't deliver it to her is because it was easier to always have the potential than a definite no?
Yeah, I mean, the hurt of a no, which I learned later, sucks. And sometimes it's fun to be in love with love.
Did you ever write a love letter that you did send?
No. I just went up to people. And now I'm just like, kill the crush. Kill the crush. You confront the person and just find out the answer so that you can have an actual real relationship with that person, whether that's platonic or romantic or go back to being strangers.
These things require more courage than most people have.
So now, like, if I'm interested in somebody, I just try at some point to confront it pretty quickly. I'm a human being, so I'm not always good at that, but I try to end it and that stage of it. A lot of that comes from, I remember how miserable I was thinking about this girl, the girl who I wrote the love letter about. I just hated the sickening feeling in my stomach about this person. And I was very unhappy with the agony of this sort of like imaginary relationship. When I was in my 20s, I had more or less forgotten about her, like the girl that I had a crush on. Like that was all out of my system. And then when I found this love letter in that box in the closet, it was like everything started like coming back. Not just like the memory of like, oh yeah, I had this crush on this girl, but like the feeling of it, the magnitude of it, the weight of it, the agony of it, just all of it, the anxiety of it pulsed through my system. And it was like, it really transported me. I had this extraordinary sense of empathy for that childhood version of myself. And I was really fascinated by the relationship between the laughter and the empathy. And that's how Mortified began.
If he'd actually sent the letter, maybe, best case scenario, Dave would have got a date. Even a few dates. Perhaps even a relationship. But he wouldn't have got Mortified.
It's a pretty seismic change this little tiny letter had in my life. Whatever my 16-year-old brain thought going on a date with her would lead to, I got something a hell of a lot better. It never ceases to amaze me where this letter has taken me. Because of this letter, I've met you.
Yes.
Because of this letter, I've traveled the world. I've met huge heads of various industries. I've met people who said that their lives changed because of something that happened in Mortified that they experienced. You know, babies have been born because of Mortified and just all these extraordinary things. That letter had no idea how powerful it was because it's just it's just like a stupid little thing saying like, this is who I am. but it's brought me a lot of misery. It's brought me a lot of joy. It's just so bizarre. It's like, how the hell of all the things. So that is never lost on me.
And they always start with hello, loves.
Yes, that was her. That was a tagline. Hello, loves.
A couple of weeks ago, I was staying with my friends Juliet and Mark in New York, and I mentioned that I was working on these episodes about letters. And each of them brought out remarkable, but very different, caches of family correspondence. Here's Mark's. In front of us is a very neat and tidy folder full of aerograms.
Aerograms.
The blue aerograms. I hadn't seen an aerogram since the early 90s, maybe.
Where do you buy them from?
No idea. Do they still sell them?
Do they sell them in a post office?
They don't. Aerograms, the prepaid all-in-one airmail letter and envelope, sometimes called air letters, stopped being available from the Royal Mail in 2012. The US phased them out around 2006. Who were these all from?
They were all from my mother. And she was a creature of habit. And she would sit down every week religiously and write us a letter. And we used to receive them, I don't know, 5 or 6 days afterwards. And it was great excitement in the family. We would sit down and I would read the Betty letter.
The Betty letter.
The Betty letter. Grandma Betty sent us a letter. And I couldn't throw them away. You've got to keep stuff like that. There's certain things you get shit all through your life and some shit you can't throw away.
Mark is from Yorkshire in Northern England, but he and his family moved to the USA 26 years ago before online communications were an option and international phone calls were prohibitively expensive. So his mother kept in touch via letter.
Some of them are so funny. Some of them read like Alan Bennett on acid. And everyone has the same format. She starts off by describing the weather in England.
Classic English opener for anything.
Yes. And then sets the scene. For example, she'll say, I've just done the washing up and I'm sitting down to write you a letter. It's raining outside. She would mention something in nature that would, you know, show what kind of weather it is. Like, I found a ladybird on my Wellington boot the other day.
She sets the scene with this detail, yes, plunging you into her own head and what her eyes, right, can see and yes, what she can feel.
And then she diverts into people in the news,
mm-hmm,
things she's either seen on TV or things she's read in the newspaper. But she doesn't put any background in. She just goes straight in for it.
So you've got to understand that that is where her mind has veered off to.
Yeah. People in Newcastle have been warned to keep an eye on their washing because there has been a lot of thefts of the black and white Newcastle shirts. Yesterday, Yorkshire beat the West Indies. I mean, she's all over the place. I bought my list of things to tell you. During the week, she would write down lists of things to tell me. And this is what we get. The big news today is that two doctors have performed an operation for a lady with a collapsed lung on a BA flight from Australia using a coat hanger, knife and fork sterilised in brandy. She is doing fine. Rang Kevin to say happy birthday. He, Judith and...
Aerograms are a single sheet of paper that folded into thirds to become a self-adhesive envelope. You were allowed to write on the whole of one side and one third of the other side. And impressively, Mark's mother always managed to fit the allotted space exactly.
That was simply wartime frugality. She lived
It's a real skill.
Well, no, because it's easy. You just fill it up with crap. The last three sentences to fill up the space. Just went out to get some beans and got stopped by Sheila, that's the next door neighbour, telling me about taking Marmy to the vets. It will cost about £50. Why would I be interested in next door's cat? Hope you feel better for your holiday, Juliet. You know, this is bringing it all back to me. We used to feign illness so she wouldn't come and visit. Hope you're feeling better for your holiday, Juliet. Looking forward to seeing you all in Scarborough. Love to you all, which is how she finished everyone. And then kiss, 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 kiss.
Aww.
So she fills the space. I think she enjoyed writing a letter because she was in control.
No one can answer back for about 3 weeks.
Yes. So I think I've got 4 or 5 years here until she passed away.
And now that she's gone, how's it different reading them now?
It's very emotional. I mean, reading, looking at her spidery white writing and then remembering what hands looked like and looking through and remembering certain things that happened. It's quite poignant. And I'm glad I've got them, which is more than I can say for that stupid doll's house that my father made for my for my daughters. I've brought it across country 3 or 4 times, unable to throw it out through sentimentality. And it's rubbish. If it were a real house, it would be condemned.
Is it full of asbestos?
It's full of asbestos. There's squirrels in the ceiling.
I'm sitting with Mark's wife, Juliet, in their kitchen in Brooklyn, New York. There's a small cardboard box in front of us.
So this is a box which is a 1950s chocolate assortment Terry's All Gold box.
The box is about the size of a 400-page paperback, a little fragile at the edges, with a photographic illustration on the lid of an opulent array of pineapples, nuts, and a blue-patterned vase. None of these things are to do with the box's original contents, chocolates, or its current ones.
I never saw this box with chocolates in it. It was sent to me in, I guess, the early 1990s by my mother. I do remember that you could see her lipstick on the stamps of the Queen outside. And so there was like a whole, almost quarter of the envelope. She didn't know how many stamps to put on it. So I suspect that she just put all the stamps that she had. You know, and I thought, well, this must be something important. You know, she's filled a quarter of this whole very tatty envelope that's come all the way from Blackpool in the north of England, the postmark was, to Los Angeles. And it was a broken bag. I mean, the envelope was it's a miracle this ever arrived. But anyway, it had purple stamps of the Queen and my mother's red lipstick was all over her face. You know, so
maybe she just really wanted to give the Queen a smooch.
So, I miss those things. I miss the visceralness of letters. And inside it was this crazy box. And so when I opened the box, I was staggered. This box is really my family history in a box.
Inside the box is a stack of letters, postcards and documents from or relating to Juliet's maternal grandparents, who were German Jews. The papers span about 40 years, from the very early 20th century till 1944.
The first thing is a very white piece of paper, which just says Marga Blake of Lytham St. Anne's. That was my mother. Her dear parents, Berthe Heilbrunn and Salomon Heilbrunn, who lived in Essen, Germany, until deported on transport number 7/1 from Düsseldorf on July 22, 1942, to Theresien. They were further deported from Theresien by transport DZ on 15th of May 1944 to Auschwitz, where they both perished. These are from my grandmother, Berthe Heilbrunn, who was my mother's mother, who died in Auschwitz. You'll see a Hitler stamp on all of them. And they basically say, thank you, I've received the package that you sent me. And then she's only been allowed to write a few things underneath.
I think a lot of people would be quite surprised that in the concentration camps, they were able to get letters out at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll see from these letters that they're printed. I mean, they're not, they're printed and you're allowed to write the smallest amount on them. So
yes, it's about a couple of dozen words that you can fit onto there.
And I'm sure you had to be very careful as to what you wrote on them. They go from Theresienstadt eventually to Auschwitz. And you can see how her handwriting declines and how weak she became.
How did the news reach your mother that her parents had died?
The letters stopped coming. There are letters in here that sort of reveal what my grandparents had done in terms of they had a business. My grandparents used to love to travel. They were great bon viveurs. They loved the opera. They had a wonderful house full of paintings. And they had great friends. They had a fabric business in Essen. And when I look at this, it comes to such an abrupt halt. They were people who had businesses, who had season tickets to the opera, who had lives. And then suddenly they had nothing. And it all grinds to this terrible halt. And so over that sort of four-year period from being taken from their home in Essen and then going to Theresienstadt and then to Auschwitz, they were snuffed out. And so many people lost their culture and their lives. And it's happening all over the world.
How do you feel when you handle these things that someone wrote over 100 years ago or someone wrote in Auschwitz?
It makes me think about the spirit of the people from whence I came. So I've traveled with this box as my touchstone. If I've had to do something really difficult, I've had this packed away with me because it gives me strength to know from what I come.
This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman, with assistance from Martin Austwick, who also provides the music for the show. You heard from, in order, Julie Shapiro, Dave Nadelberg, Mark Shepherd, and Juliet Blake. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is... drabble. Verb. Make wet and dirty in muddy water. Try using it in an email today. You can find the show on Facebook and Twitter. Seek out Allusionist Show. And to see some of the letters that have been discussed in this episode, visit theallusionist.org.